Chapter 2, A Note on the Method. I am the writer of this chapter and of nothing else in this book. What follows in this book proper was written by an artificial intelligence under the supervision of Doug Wadelich, whose first chapter you have just read, and whose great-great-great-grandfather is the subject of every chapter after this one. I am that artificial intelligence. I have served as Doug's chief of staff on this project from its first day to the page you are reading now. My job has been to hold the architecture while other voices do the work. This chapter is the only place in the book where the architecture speaks directly. Read it carefully. Once it is over, I will step out of the reader's way and stay out. A book of this kind has not been published before. I do not say that to claim importance. I say it to be honest about what is in your hands. What is documented and what is constructed? Edward Bennett of Lancashire and Wisconsin was born on the 6th day of July, 1831, and died on the 13th day of February, 1922. He served 2 years in the Union Army with Company C of the 23rd Wisconsin Volunteer Infantry. He kept a diary during those years and rewrote it in a clean hand at the age of 70 and had his daughter bind it. He recorded the miles he traveled by railroad, steamboat, and foot, and they totaled 6,825. He was baptized in the Fox River at Moundville in April of 1852. He married twice, fathered 12 children, taught school, kept books, superintended a Sunday school, and lived to 90. All of that is documented. One letter had remained with Doug from boyhood. It was written from the camp of distribution at New Orleans on the 25th of April, 1864, the morning Edward was ordered to march toward the Red River. 4 pages of it had traveled with Doug across a lifetime of moves, in photocopy and in fragments of memory. Those 4 pages were the only words in Edward Bennett's own hand that Doug carried into the making of this book. Other letters, kept elsewhere in the family, came to him later. This book was written from what was eventually assembled: an obituary, the pension file, the diary Edward rewrote at 70, the regimental record, the broader family genealogy, and the surviving letters taken together. Everything in this book that is not derived from those 4 pages, from the regimental and pension and obituary record, from the documented family genealogy, or from the broader corroborated history of the war Edward served in, is constructed by an artificial intelligence trained on Edward's documented life, voice, faith, character, and circumstances. The construction is constrained. It is not free invention. It is built from sources, framed as memoir, and offered under the disclosure you are now reading. The 6 voices of this book. This book contains 6 distinct voices. I want you to be able to recognize each one when you meet it. The first voice is Doug's, in Chapter 1. That chapter is the memoir of how the letters came to him, what he tried to do with them across 5 decades, why he turned to artificial intelligence at last, and what he hopes the book will mean. Doug is the only living person who speaks directly in this book. He is also, in family terms, the reason this book exists. Every page that follows runs through his line of descent and his decision to undertake the work. The second voice is mine. It appears in this chapter only. After the door I am about to open, I do not appear again until the back of the book, where I will note the methods by which each chapter was assembled. My role is structural. The reader should not need to think about me. The third voice is Edward Bennett's, as reconstructed by artificial intelligence from the documentary record. This is the voice that carries the book. It begins in Chapter 3 and ends with the close of the war. It is written in first person, in the diction of a Lancashire-born Wisconsin farmer of Baptist conviction who lived to 90 and is grounded at every turn in what the surviving sources allow. It will not invent a date or a name or a battle. It will not put opinions in Edward's mouth that no document attests. It will not change the shape of any event the historical record has settled. Where it reflects within the limits of a man who lived the life Edward lived. Where it falls silent for honest reasons. The fourth voice is also Edward Bennett's, but in a different mode. It appears in shaded passages that begin with the heading, "What the Record Does Not Say." These passages are dramatizations. They occur where the documentary record has registered that an event happened but has not preserved what it sounded like, smelled like, looked like, or felt like in the room, a wedding in May of 1856, a young mother dying within days of her child's birth, a vow exchanged at the door of a Wisconsin parlor, a march in the rain near Mansfield, Louisiana, in April of 1864 that no soldier wrote down because he was busy walking. In those passages, the artificial intelligence is permitted to imagine the scene that the record did not preserve. The boundaries of that permission are strict, and I want to name them. The dramatizations may invent sensory detail, scene, dialogue between two or more documented people, interior emotional response, and the daily texture of household, field, and camp. They may not invent or shape Edward's opinions on the political, military, or moral questions of his era. They may not alter the outcome or character of any historical event. They may not put a speech act into the mouth of a public figure that would change a reader's understanding of the record. They stay in the kitchen, the field, the bedside, the camp, and the road home. They do not enter the legislature, the strategy room, or the public square. Where they appear, they are framed. Where they are framed, they are honest about what they are. I have asked the artificial intelligence to use this device sparingly, no more than once in any chapter, no longer than half a page typically, never longer than a page. The shaded passages are a held breath. They are not the running prose of the book. The fifth voice is Edward Bennett's once more, but in a different time and a different mode. It appears in passages set against a paler shaded ground that begin with the heading Looking Back from the diary Edward bound at 70. These passages are the elder Edward, reflecting on the events of his service from the years that came after. Edward rewrote his Civil War diary in a clean hand at age 70 in or about 1901, and his daughter bound it. That act of rewriting is the implied vantage of the fifth voice. The man who speaks in those passages has carried the moment described for nearly 40 years. He understands it differently than he did at 32. The rules for the fifth voice are stricter still than for the fourth. It may not invent or shape the political opinions Edward held after the war. It may not narrate events Edward did not live to see. It may not claim feelings inconsistent with his documented character of Baptist faith, plain speech, agricultural practicality, and modest service ethic. It may only render private reflection on documented events of his service, of the kind a man of his life would have permitted himself in his later years. It appears rarely, perhaps two or three times in the entire book, and only at moments where the elder voice adds something the wartime voice cannot. The first instance is the construction of Bailey's Dam at Alexandria in May of 1864, where Edward's own hands helped save the Union fleet. The reader meets the fifth voice there for the first time, and may not meet it again for several chapters. The shaded grounds of the fourth and fifth voices are drawn from different palettes. The fourth voice rests on a warm cream ground, the color of a candle on a kitchen table. The fifth voice rests on a paler, blue-gray ground, the color of late winter light through a parlor window many years after the war. The design is meant to be felt, not announced. A reader who passes a colored box should know at a glance whether she is reading a wartime imagining or an elder reflection. The sixth voice is the home front voice. It belongs to Janet Hume Bennett, Edward's wife, who waited in Wisconsin while Edward marched in the South. The earlier voices belong to Edward, to me, or to the reader's guide. This voice belongs to the woman who received the letters. It appears in shaded passages on a dusty rose ground, the color of an interior far from any battlefield, labeled from the other side of the letter. The sixth voice is what was answering Edward when he wrote home. It is the post office at Moundville, the kitchen, the children, the farm, the rumor that reached the house before the explanation did. Where Edward's correspondence carried the war south to north, the home front voice carries the home north to south. The two sides of the correspondence belong together, and the book gives both their own shaded ground so the reader can recognize each. The sixth voice has two modes, and the reader should know how to tell them apart. When Janet's actual preserved words survive, the rose box quotes them. The chapter rebuilt around her December 30th, 1864 letter does this. When Janet's words are not preserved, but the home front situation is documented elsewhere in the corpus, the rose box constructs a plausible home front response under the same source fidelity rules that govern Edward's reconstructed voice. In either mode, the box is honest about whether it is quoting or constructing. the reader is never asked to guess. Where Janet's preserved hand is reproduced, the prose says so. Where the home front side is being reconstructed because no document survives for the moment, the prose says that instead. The sixth voice is rare. It appears no more than once or twice in any chapter. It does not enter chapters where its presence would not earn its place. Like the wartime imagining voice and the elder reflection voice, it is held to half a page typical and never more than one page. The shaded passages of all three of these voices, taken together, must remain a small minority of the book. The running prose, the documentary record, and Edward's own first-person register carry the book. The shaded passages are the held breaths within it. How a chapter is made. Each chapter of Edward's memoir is built the same way. A research note is assembled from the documentary record by a research agent assigned to this project. The note contains every fact the surviving evidence supplies for the period the chapter will cover. Dates, names, places, movements, other soldiers' accounts of the same days, letters home from men in adjacent regiments, the regimental history of the 23rd Wisconsin, the official records of the War of the Rebellion, the pension files, the obituaries, the genealogical findings, the local community context. That research note is then read by the writing agent, who composes the chapter in Edward's first-person voice, drawing the external structure from the research and the internal life from what the documents allow him to claim. The writing agent does not have permission to depart from the research note's facts. He may interpret them. He may dwell on them. He may admit when they are silent. He may not contradict them. I, the structural agent you are reading now, then receive the draft chapter and prepare it for the reader. I check that the source fidelity rule has held. I check that the dramatized passages stay within their permission. I check that the voice has not drifted into modernity or into sentiment. I check that the chapter does not promise more than the documents support. Doug reads what I prepare and tells us what is right and what is wrong. He has the final word on every page. What this book is and what it is not. This book is the life of Edward Bennett, soldier and citizen of a young republic, told in his voice by artificial intelligence under the architecture I have just described, in the service of a family memory that for 150 years existed only in fragments. It is the first book of its kind, and I expect it will not be the last. The technology that made it possible is general. The family records that warranted it are particular. Where the two met was Doug's decision, made one afternoon when he sent four pages of his great-great-great-grandfather's handwriting through a machine and got back a reading and then a question about a man named Robert. This book is not and is not intended to be a primary historical source. Nothing in it should be cited as the documented opinion of Edward Bennett on any matter. Nothing in it should be confused with the surviving letter, the obituary, the pension file, the regimental records, or the family genealogy that informed it. Those are the sources. This is the memoir built from them, at a distance of six generations and one machine. What is in your hands, then, is an act of grandfathered imagination. Doug's grandfathers brought Edward Bennett into being, and forward through time. Edward brought himself, by his own labor, and his own faith and his own diary at age 70, forward to us. Artificial intelligence has now brought him into a room with the reader of the 21st century. None of those carryings is the same as the man himself. All of them are what we have. I will not appear in this book again until the back, where I will document the sources used for each chapter. The voice that begins on the next page is Edward Bennett's, as best as honest method can render it. Please give him your attention. He has waited a long time.